Jagat Isha,
Jagat Isha,
O Lord of the Universe,
O Lord of the Universe,
Kamaye,
Kamaye,
I desire,
Mama,
my, Janmani,
Janmani,
in birth,
Janmani,
after birth,
Ishare,
unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
Bhavatat,
let there be.
Bhakti,
devotional service.
Ohaituki,
with no motives.
Twayi,
unto you.
O
Lord of the universe, I do not desire material wealth, materialistic followers, a beautiful wife, or fruitive activities described in flowery language. All I want, life after life, is unmotivated devotional service to you. Dhanajana nahi mago kavita sundari shuddha bhakti deha more Krishna kripa kori. My dear Lord Krishna, I do not want material wealth from you, nor do I want followers, a beautiful wife, or the results of fruitive activities. I only pray that by your causeless mercy, you give me pure devotional service to you, life after life. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tathati Shapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatapada Kamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavanscha Shri Rupam Sagrashatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parishana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamsha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta. Keep leading. Nam na janam na sundarim kavitam va jagadi shatame mama janmani janmani shire bhavatad bhaktir rohit tuki twai dhana jana nahi mago kavita shwara shuddha bhakti deha more krishna kripa kori. Here Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is offering the shikshashtaka prayers. The Kaviraj Goswami simply translates, really, the Sanskrit into Bengali, just puts it in Bengali language. The meaning is very straightforward and at the same time very profound. Nadhanam, Najanam, Nashanri. Everyone wants these things. The conditioned souls are generally after these objectives. Dhana, they want money. Either they want they're small scale or huge scale, but where is money, where is money, where is money? Great concern. And if I could have, if I could be rich, and then if I could be more rich, and still we could make more money. Dhana. People are very interested in wealth. And jhana, followers. The big politicians want followers, the big authors want followers, big musicians want followers, big philosophers want followers, big sports figures want followers, high school students want followers. Practically, if someone can be a big man or a big person amongst his or her contemporaries, then they're happy. Count their followers. The desire is there, the desire to have a lot of followers, a lot of adherence. Jhana. That's another kind of collecting. We can collect money, we can collect people. Of course, in the Krishna consciousness movement, we do these both things. We collect money and we collect people. But we collect them to offer to Krishna. If we collect a lot of money, it's not that now we become rich. I've collected so much money, I can bank it and enjoy. But whatever we collect is offered at the lotus feet of Krishna. So the collection propensity is there in everyone. We all want to collect something. You know, people collect stamps, people collect seashells or coins. Or they collect money. So we collect money or whatever else may be useful, but not for ourselves, we offer to Krishna. And jhanam also, we want to increase the number, but not the number of my followers. Now I have 10, I could have 100, now I have 100, I could have 10,000. Our goal is not that I should have a lot of followers, but that Krishna should have more and more devotees. More and more of the followers of Maya should become followers of Krishna. But a pure devotee doesn't want, Lord, may I have a lot of money, may I have a lot of followers. Or Sundari. Sundari means beautiful wife or beautiful girlfriend. These days people don't want wives, they want girlfriends. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time, people were more dignified. If they wanted a beautiful woman, they wanted to marry her. In any case, people want to have a beautiful wife for enjoyment. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, no, I don't want that. That's a kind of intoxication. My wife is so beautiful. Can enjoy. Dhanam, janam, sundari, very attractive features of the material world. Dhana, jana, sundari, kavitam. Kavitam here is translated as fruitive activities described in flowery language. Kavita means poetry. So in Bhagavad Gita, Yam imam pushpitam vacham pravadanti avipaschitaha veda vadarata partananyadastiti bhava. The less intelligent people, apaschit, less experienced, less intelligent, they're childish, avipaschit. Prabhupada translated, I think, it's childish. The childish people are very much attracted to the flowery words of the Vedas. The
Vedic literature describes the heavenly planets in very attractive language. And the less thoughtful people are attracted to that. And Krishna condemns in Bhagavad Gita that they're childish. Go to the heavens and beautiful girls and beautiful gardens and demigods live forever and so on. And people read this and go, Kavita. Or even, that's Vedic, of course, now it's the advertising agencies. They're the main poets of the Kali Yuga. In the previous ages, it was the sages who offered Vedic direction. In the present age, it's the ad men. Picture yourself feeling young and fresh, wearing our satin dresses from such and such. You know, picture yourself, you know, you're a leader, you're strong, your people are, you think for yourself and you do what you want, you dress with blah blah, whatever it is. People think, yeah, I'm tough, I'm strong, I'm a leader. I spend all this money for their stupid suit. So, and it's described, you know, how whatever it is, if you buy this or you buy that, how good it is. And so people are engaged in fruitive activities, working to get something. Prabhupada says, will of the wisp. Really, all it is poetic language. The whole thing is the picture in the mind by poetic description. I won't make up any more. If they're not paying me, I'm not going to write any. But there's so many things you can, if you pick up a magazine or you pick up, tune into the television. There are people who pay good money to describe their awful product in poetic language so that it becomes attractive and you picture yourself in some sort of fantasy, some sort of illusion, some sort of ideal. And how much better your life is going to be because you have a lawn king lawnmower. Whatever it is. So kavita, or you know, hey, that's why just buy things? Now you're just an ordinary fellow working in the street. You could be a soldier. You could be on the front lines of technology and achievement. You could be defending your country. Yeah, I mean, the real story is you could get your head shot off. I was hearing that Rabindra Sood was saying the average life of a soldier on the battlefield is something like 14 seconds or something like that in actual combat. The ordinary soldiers are just, you know, it's a question of numbers. If you have more than they have, then you can, you know, lose 25% of your force and win. So, but people, you know, sign on to the picture of how you could be something. And really it's just fruitive activities described in flowery language. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, I don't want anything. Or kavita, Sundari kavita can also be put together of a beautiful poetic wife. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, I don't want these things. Na, na, na. Natanam najanam na sundarim kavitam va jagadisha. O Lord of the universe, Krishna, kamaye, I don't have these material desires. Mama janmani janmani shire. Generally, after being disappointed in material activities, one may become either suicidal or attracted to merging with the Supreme which is another kind of suicide. That now I've seen the real nature of these fruitive activities or these material enjoyments. So now let me give them all up and become one with God. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, I don't want that either. Mama janmani janmani shure bhavatad bhaktir hoi tuki tway. I just want to serve you. Even life after life, that means liberation is not the point. Ohaituki bhakti. Ohaitu, hetu means cause. And ohaituki means without any cause, without any motive. Generally people are engaged in the service of the Lord for some motive. Even in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, arto artarti jigyasu ganicha. They're after relief from distress, they're after money, they're curious, they want to satisfy their curiosity, they're looking for knowledge. The two lower stages are looking for money or looking for relief. The two higher stages are curious and looking for knowledge. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, no, I don't want any, there's no motive here. I'm your servant, you're my master, I just want to serve. Well, hate to keep up. Ayi nanda tanuja kinkanam. Sorry. Ati dainye puna mage dasya bhakti dan apanare kore shangshari jiva abhiman. In great humility, considering himself a conditioned soul of the material world, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again expressed his desire to be endowed with service to the Lord. O my Lord, O Krishna, son of Maharaj Nanda, I am your eternal servant, but because of my fruitive acts, I have fallen in this horrible ocean of nescience. Now please be causelessly merciful to me. Consider me a particle of your lotus feet. Elsewhere, Srila Prabhupada translates, somehow or other I've fallen into the ocean of material existence. And here Prabhupada says, because of my own fruitive acts. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just says, patitam, I'm fallen. And Srila Prabhupada, well, let's see, actually, Kaviraj Goswami translates this. Tomar nitya dasmi, toma pasariya, pariyachon pavarnave, maya bantaha. I am your eternal servant, but I forgot your lordship. Now I have fallen in the ocean of nescience and have been conditioned by the external energy. There are some people who put forward the idea, you know, well, Srila Prabhupada said that we're eternal servants of Krishna and somehow or other we've forgotten our relationship with Krishna. And therefore we've fallen into material existence. There are some people who think that Srila Prabhupada didn't really mean that or that that's not really the Vaishnav conclusion. But here we see that Kaviraj Goswami says, Toma Pasariya, I forgot you. That's his translation, his gloss, or his really translation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's statement. Pasariya, toma pasariya pariyachon bhavarnade. Because I forgot you, I've fallen into this material existence. So if you have a problem with that, take it up with Kaviraj Goswami. That's what he says. Our problem, you'll never figure out when we forgot Krishna. That will be, it's anadi kal say, since time immemorial. If we try to figure out what happens way back in the beginning of time immemorial, we will knot our brains in loops and go mad. But The essential thing is to be understood. Tomar nitya dasmi, I am your eternal servant. And toma pasariya, I forgot you. Pariyachon bhavarnave, maya bhadaha, I've become conditioned by the external energy and I've fallen into the bhavarnava, the ocean of birth and death. So, kripa kori kora more, paraduli sam, tomar sheva korom, tomar shevam. Kripa kori kora more, paraduli sam. Please be merciful to me. To get free from material existence depends on the mercy of Krishna. It's not possible simply by one's own efforts, by performing ritualistic activities, merely by the force of sadhana, by intellectual understanding, by piety, by anything. Finally, kripa kori kora, to be engaged in the devotional service of the Lord requires the mercy of Krishna. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prays, kripa kori kora. Please give me your mercy. Please be merciful to me. And everything finally depends on Krishna's mercy. Paratulisham. Make me like a particle of dust at your lotus feet. Tomar shevak koro. Tomar shevam. I'm your servant. Please engage me in your service. Please place me as a particle of dust. He doesn't say, place me as one of the big shots in the spiritual world. He doesn't specify, please give me this particular confidential relationship. Here, he simply says, I'm your servant. Please engage me. One may desire some particular service in the advanced stage in the spiritual world. One may desire some particular service, but that can't be prematurely realized. That comes with maturity. But here's the essence. Whatever the relationship, I'm your servant. The essence of all relationships is service. Whether it's dasya, shakya, vatsalya, madhurya, the relationship is that you're the master, I'm the servant. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, please engage me in your service. Prabhupada said that's Prabhupada's translation of the Hare Krishna mantra. O Lord, O energy of the Lord, please engage me in your service. Puna ati utkanta danya hila utnam Krishna tai mage prema nam shankirtan. Natural humility and eagerness then awoke in Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He prayed to Krishna to be able to chant the Maha Mantra in ecstatic love. In each of these, as we go along, humility, humility, humility is awakening in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And here, utkanta, ati utkanta, exceeding eagerness, great eagerness. Nayanam galadashudharaya, varanam gadgadhulu daya, gida, pulukaya nichitam vapukada, tavanama grahane pavishyati. My dear Lord, when will my eyes be beautified by filling with tears that constantly glide down as I chant your holy name? When will my voice falter and all the hairs on my body stand erect in transcendental happiness as I chant your holy name? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is desiring the pure state of Krishna consciousness. These transcendental symptoms of ecstasy develop when one is purified. They can be imitated in the for some motive. Dhanam janam sundarim. You know, I'll cry and all the girls will swoon. I'll cry and people will throw money at me. I'll roll on the ground and I'll have so many followers. But here Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is desiring. In the Bhagavatam it said that one who chants Hare Krishna and doesn't experience these symptoms must have a heart that's framed with steel. He's chanting Hare Krishna. He's coming in direct touch with Krishna and nothing's happening. He's not experiencing any change. So Bhagavatam says his heart must be framed with steel. It's not melting, it's not changing, it's just mechanical. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Utkanta and Taimya, with great humility and great eagerness, is desiring to come to that stage where these symptoms of transcendental ecstasy will appear, and he'll chant the name of the Lord with transcendental love. Premadhan bina vyarta daridra jivan dasha kohi vetan more deha premadhan. Without love of God, without love of Godhead, my life is useless. Therefore, I pray that you accept me as your servant and give me the salary of ecstatic love of God.
Hare Krishna.
Rashantaraveshe hoilo vyogashpuran udvega vishadainya kore pralapan. Separation from Krishna awoke various mellows of distress, lamentation, and humility. Thus, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke like a crazy man. Yugayitam nimeshena chakshusha pravarshayatam chakshusha pravarshayatam shunyayatam jagat sarvam govinda virahiname. My Lord Govinda, because of separation from you, I consider even a moment a great millennium. Tears flow from my eyes like torrents of rain, and I see the entire world as void. Udvege dibasha nayai kshana hoilo yugasham barshar megha prai ashru varishe nayan. In my agitation, a day never ends, for every moment seems like a millennium. Pouring incessant tears, my eyes are like clouds in the rainy season. Govinda birahe shunya hoilo tribhuvan tushanale pore jena na yai jivan. The three worlds have become void because of separation from Govinda. I feel as if I were burning alive in a slow fire. Sanatan Goswami explains that these symptoms of apparent distress lie at the summit of transcendental ecstasy. They appear to be distressing. They appear to be painful, but they manifest the highest feelings of transcendental ecstatic love for Krishna. And actually, these feelings are relished by the pure devotees. Krishna udasina hoila korite parikshan shaki shab kahe Krishna kara upekhan.
Lord Krishna has become indifferent to me just to test my love, and my friends say better to disregard him.
Eteka chintite radhar nirmala hridoy svabhavika premar svabhava koila udoy.
While Srimati Radharani was thinking in this way, the characteristics of natural love became manifest because of her pure heart. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani, so he's speaking in this way.
Irsya utkanta dhainya praudhi binoy eta bhav ekatai korila udoy.
The ecstatic symptoms of envy, great eagerness, humility, zeal, and supplication all became manifest at once.
Eta bhave radhar man asthir haila sakigan age praudhi shloka ye parila.
In that mood, the mind of Srimati Radharani was agitated, and therefore she spoke a verse of advanced devotional service, advanced devotion to her gopi friends.
She bhave prabhu she shloka uchcharila shloka uchcharite tad rupa apane hela.
In the same spirit of ecstasy, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recited that verse, and as soon as he did so, he felt like Srimati Radharani.
Ashlishya va padaratam panastuma adarshanan marmahatam kurotuva yata tata va viditatu lampato mat prananatas tu sevana para.
Let Krishna tightly embrace this maidservant who has fallen at his lotus feet. Let him trample me or break my heart by never being visible to me. He's a debauchee, after all, and can do whatever he likes. But he is still no one other than the worshipable Lord of my heart.
Ami Krishna Paradashi Teho Rasa Shukarashi Alingiya Kore Atmasat Kiba Na Deya Darshan Jarena Mora Tanuman Tabu Teho Mora Prananat.
I am a maidservant of the lotus feet of Krishna. He is the embodiment of transcendental happiness and mellows. If he likes, he can tightly embrace me and make me feel oneness with him. Or by not giving me his audience, he may corrode my mind and body. Nevertheless, it is he who is the Lord of my life.
Shakihe Shunamor maner nishchoy kiba anuraga kore kiba dukkha diamare mora praneshar Krishna anyanoy.
My dear friend, just hear the decision of my mind. Krishna is the Lord of my life in all conditions, whether he shows me affection or kills me by giving me unhappiness.
Chari anya narigan mor vasha tanuman mor sobhagya prakata kuriya ta shabare deya prida ama shone kore krida she narigane dekana.
Sometimes Krishna gives up the company of other gopis and becomes controlled, mind and body, by me. Thus he manifests my good fortune and gives others distress by performing his loving affairs with me.
Kibateho lampata shata drishta shakapata anya nari gana kori shat more dite manapida mora age kore krida tabuteho mora prananat. Or, since after all, he's a very cunning, obstinate debauchee with a propensity to cheat, he takes to the company of other women. He then indulges in loving affairs with them in front of me to give distress to my mind. Nevertheless, he is still the Lord of my life. Na goni apana duk shabe banchi tarashuk tar shuka amar tatparja more jori dia duk tar hailo mahashuk she dukkha mor shuka parja. I do not mind my personal distress. I only wish for the happiness of Krishna. For his happiness is the goal of my life. If he feels great happiness in giving me distress, that distress is the best of my happiness. Purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that a devotee does not care about his own happiness and distress. He is simply interested in seeing that Krishna is happy. And for that purpose, he engages in various activities. A pure devotee has no way of sensing happiness except by seeing that Krishna is happy in every respect. If Krishna becomes happy by giving him distress, such a devotee accepts that unhappiness as the greatest of all happiness. Those who are materialistic, however, who are very proud of material wealth and have no spiritual knowledge, like the Prakriti Sahajiyas, regard their own happiness as the aim of life. Some of them aspire to enjoy themselves by sharing the happiness of Krishna. This is the mentality of fruitive workers who want to enjoy sense gratification by making a show of service to Krishna. 52 is where we're supposed to stop today. Yeah. Any questions?
Mm-hmm. In the Bhagavad Gita, actually, the Lord, he says that if you're not successful in spiritual life, you can either take birth in the family of devotees or birth in a wealthy family. So it almost seems like the wealth is almost a reward. There must be something good about it if
Shuchinam Srimitam Gehe Yoga Brashto Vijayate. So there must be something good about wealth if it's what you get if you practice devotional service and don't complete it. That's lesser. Better is Shuchina. You may be born in a wealthy family. Better is to be born in a Brahmin family. Brahmins are not wealthy. Brahmins are poor. But they have spiritual wealth. They have knowledge. So Srila Prabhupada comments that if after some time of practicing devotional service, one falls down, one may take birth in a wealthy family. But after longer practice, if one falls down, after one becomes more advanced, then he'll take birth in a Brahmin family. So it's more of an advantage to be poor than to be rich. Atava yoginam eva kule pavate dhimata. And still better is to take birth in the family of transcendentalists, the family of devotees. That's still better. Otherwise, to be born in a wealthy family, you get the opportunity for education, you get the opportunity for culture. Srimad. Brahmana Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra. But you don't have to be born in a laborer community. You can be born in a mercantile community. Better is to be born in the Brahmin community. And still better is to be born in the devotee community. Of course, from any community, anyone can be Krishna conscious. But these are advantages. Is that okay?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Maharaj, you talked about some inconceivable aspects of the philosophy, and sometimes it seems as though these inconceivable things disempower us from presenting Krishna consciousness as a logical spiritual science. It seems that sometimes we use arguments against scientists, but we're kind of shooting ourselves in the foot because they could use the same arguments against us. Like we talk about post-dated checks, and we're saying, you know, the origins of the universe, and, but you can't show it in your laboratory.
Our method is different. Their method is that we'll understand everything by empiric investigation. We'll show it in our laboratories, we'll test it, we'll find it out and prove it. That's their method. So following their method, they have to do it. We can't accept that just because you have a theory, that's how things are. You have to demonstrate your theory. You have to show the goods. Our method is different. We're not depending on empiric investigation. Our method, we have the shortcut method that Krishna says we accept. Their method is that to find out who your father is, they'll go through 100 million DNA profiles and see which one matches the most closely. And then they'll revise their scientific protocols, and they'll say, well, actually it could be this way or that way, or else another 300 million profiles will become available, and they'll say, oh, well, we didn't take these into account. So that's their method. It depends on empiric investigation, demonstration. Our method is, we'll ask our mother. She says, this man is your father. Business finished. We don't have to do anything further in the way of investigation, further follow-up, independent research, verified by another lab. We don't have to go through all that. Save a lot of money, among other things. We get direct. So our research method is different. We accept from the authority, you have to figure it out. So if our process was to figure it out, we'd be in a pickle like you. We would be in difficulty. Where did things begin? This, that. We'd have to figure it all out and say, well, it seems like most likely it's probable that it's, as far as we can understand, it's what our research has shown so far is. But we simply just take it. Here's what Krishna says.
A certain amount of empiricism even in Krishna, like Krishna says in the Gita, Pratyaksha.
Yeah, empiric. You chant Hare Krishna, you'll feel happy. That's empiric investigation in Krishna consciousness. You'll experience it. This is empiric investigation. First you put your finger on the plate, then you pick up the halva, then you put it in your mouth, and other things happen, and then you tell us how it works. That's Pratyaksha, direct experience. But by direct experience also, you'll see how Krishna consciousness is nice, how the chanting is nice, how the feasting is nice, how everything is nice in Krishna consciousness, the way of life. That's direct experience. But we won't figure out so many things simply by research. But what Krishna says, we'll have confirmed by direct experience.
Sometimes we describe Krishna consciousness as a science, so we have, for example, the science of self-realization. So how legitimate is it to call it a science? What is the definition of science? Usually people describe it as something which is objective.
Yes, how legitimate is our use of the word science? Our science, what do we mean by science? We mean vigyan. In Indian languages, vigyan, science, it's vigyan. Yes? Is this on the same question?
Yeah, connected to the question.
Okay. You, but whatever you're saying has to be triple loud because you have a soft voice and you're way in the back.
It sounds to me a little like Maharaj. It's like we accept the authority, and then on those grounds we experience.
Yeah, we accept authority, and in that way we experience.
The other one, it sounds like
they experience
first, and then
they reach a conclusion. Yes. Opposite method. They want to monopolize science and say science means only this. No, we don't have to go by that. They have their science, we have our science. You say science means to go through all these DNA tests and figure out who your father might be, and we say science means ask your mom. So you have a choice. Your science or our science? This is our science. That we'll go to the supreme authority. Even your science works that way. I mean, you accept that whatever it is, that X is the speed of light, whatever number that is, or you accept that there's a redshift of such and such magnitude. Did you do that research? Have you independently confirmed that? Did you pick up a few $1 billion worth of research money and check for yourself whether this was the magnitude of the redshift? Or did you accept it from authorities? Have you done all these experiments you read about in biology class and physics class and this class and that class? Or did you accept it on authority? Even your evolution, have you seen this species evolve into that species and that species evolve into the next species because of survival of the fittest and all this and that? You had a few million years to kill, so you decided to watch it happen. You accepted on authority. Unfortunately, an uninformed authority. But you accept it on authority. The biology teacher says, and over the course of years in the Pleistocene period, this happened and that happened, and you say, oh, that's what happened. And this evolved into that because of this and that. Giraffes had long necks because they evolved by reaching for higher branches and whatever it is they're saying. People don't test it, they can't. I'm not going to go back in a time machine to the Pleistocene era and see what happened. I accept it all on authority. I don't go out to all these archaeological sites, my geological sites, and find out what was there. I accept. It's published in a reputable journal. I accept it. So your science also, in so many ways, depends on hearing from authority. We just like our authority better than your authority. Your authority has 4 defects. Ours doesn't. So our method of science is a little different from your method of science. Your science also has hidden presumptions which we are not prepared to accept. You have the hidden presumption that everything works mechanistically, that everything is just happens by the laws of nature, the hidden presumption that life arises simply by natural processes, that is, by material processes. These presumptions amount to essentially a religious faith. You can't demonstrate by science that everything happens simply because of interactions of material forces with no requirement for intelligent direction. You can't prove that. But it's the underlying presumption, your whole approach to the explanation of nature. That nature works independently by its own capable forces. And that's what's there as the bedrock of your faith. And the bedrock of our faith is that there's a supreme intelligent person who directs the affairs of material nature. Maya Jakshana Prakriti Suyate Satyatra. Hetanamina Kantya Jagati Paragrapta. That when you see a machine working with exquisite precision, it's because there's an intelligent person behind the workings of the machine. That's our underlying presumption. So, you know, you want to bluff that our presumptions are scientific and your presumptions are superstitious. Our presumptions are objective and your presumptions are religious. Baloney. You can't conclusively demonstrate that everything comes from matter, that there's no intelligent design behind anything. It's just your prejudice. And you want to make it, this is science. Anything other than this is not science. Get lost. We don't have to play that game. If you really want to be objective, the question is open. Not the question is closed, and you know, as soon as you start talking about higher intelligence, sorry, closed book, not science, goodbye. But then when you want to make the opposite presumptions, that there's no intelligent direction behind everything, that life just happens from material combinations, that matter just exists by its own power and develops by its own power, then if everything's fine, that's science. Mm-mm. Yes.
I was preaching to one guest and trying to show them that the scriptures are authoritative, and they were saying that just like you have your opinion that these scriptures are from God, my opinion is that the scriptures are man-made. So he was saying, why should I accept your scriptures?
You don't have to accept, of course. Great intelligent persons like Ramanuja, Madhva, Shankara, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they've accepted. So, and your crowd doesn't accept. But we accept on the ground, on the following the acharyas, we accept. And therefore we get the benefit. You don't have to accept. But then you'll remain in the dark. You know, I have the London A to Z. You don't have to believe in it. You don't have to have faith in it. And you can get lost. We have access to information which is simply otherwise unavailable. You're not going to find out by empiric investigation what lies beyond matter. Achinchakaluye pava, ayam tarkena yojiye. By logic, you're not going to find out what lies beyond the realm of logic. By empiric investigation, you're not going to find out what lies beyond the realm of empiric investigation. Sitting here in London, you're not going to find out by sensory inspection what's going on in China. For that, you have to accept authorities. You don't have to, but then you won't know. You'll know what's going on in your neighborhood. But if you want to have a broader understanding, you need to hear from people who know more. Even what's going on in your neighborhood. And there's some festival going on in Thames this weekend, and part of it is that they're giving guided tours of what lies beneath your feet, you know, thousands of years of history. You won't even know that unless you hear from the authority. People are just walking around London, they have no idea what's under their feet. You know, concrete and dirt, that's what's beneath my feet. There's all this history that you can understand when you hear from the authority. And if you don't hear from the authority, you don't have to hear from the authority. You can just walk on the dirt and that's what it is. But even to understand what's under your feet in London, if you want this deeper understanding, you have to go to the authorities and they say, oh, these people were here and those people were here and there was this and there was that. And when you hear from them, you get knowledge. Yes?
I was just hearing that Prabhupada in class was also explaining how Krishna consciousness is silence, and he was saying very simply that silence means what applies to everyone. Everyone gets old and everyone gets disease, and when you chant everyone who chants Hare Krishna can get rid of it.
Yeah, this is science. Everyone gets old, everyone gets diseased, everyone dies, and then there's rebirth. This is science. Why are you investigating, the sex life of a mosquito? How important is that? Yeah, these are the urgent issues. Why is there old age? Why is there disease? Why is there death? And what happens after that? There's so many scientific questions they're examining, but why don't you examine these questions? Well, Prabhupada he spoke at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, the premier scientific university, and said that you have so many departments of knowledge. Where is the department to understand the difference between a living body and a dead body? Body dies, something is missing. What is that something? This you should study. So, in science, you should study the most urgent issues. How to go to Mars. That's really urgent. What will you do on Mars? Eat, sleep, mate, and fight. So what, and for this we'll spend billions and billions of dollars. Does this solve your problem on Earth? Even if we send one or two or three people to Mars, or send a space probe up there, does that solve these problems? These are your problems. Everyone has to die. Everyone has to get old. Everyone has to suffer disease. And then something happens to everyone that we don't know about. Isn't that worth scientific investigation? Why are you busy sending your toys to Mars and spending so much money? Another definition of science is wasting money.
I was reading some time back that they're spending so much money on to find out how the cow that eats green grass can produce white milk. Still, they don't know what's the chemical effect. And I heard it's long research that's been going on.
Yeah, and our science is that we'll offer the milk to Krishna and drink it. No research required. Even empirically, by following your scientific method and your so-called objective approach in which everything happens automatically without any need for God, has your world become happy? Have you become happy? Test our devotees. They're chanting Hare Krishna and feeling happy. And it doesn't cost any money. So why should so much money be spent on a program? I mean, after all, science is for happiness. We're doing this because we expect that in some way we're going to make people more happy. So why should you spend so many billions of dollars on a project that hasn't really made anyone more happy and arguably has increased the distress? And for free you can chant Hare Krishna and be happy.
Is it a flex? I know I was reading Srila Prabhupada say technologies for the demons, which I thought was quite a heavy comment, but is there a place for technology and scientific advancement in today's society in the absence of, say, all the more powerful Vedic sciences like the Ashwamedha?
Well, it's not that we need all this technical Vedic stuff to live, and it's also not that we need all this scientific stuff to live. The basic things are simple. Just I'm very enlivened to hear how so many vegetables and different items are being produced here on the manor, on your own land, just by using the oxen, and without any chemicals, without any so-called scientific inputs. You're growing nice food, offering to Krishna, and you have abundance. Who has improved over that? Who has improved on that in the last so many thousands of years?
People usually point towards medical science that was saving people's lives.
You know, haven't saved even one person's life. Get off it. Not one person fewer has died. And rather, if we really look at your science, who controls the science budget? You know, where is the money coming from for scientific research? Okay, the government. And where is the government allocating its resources? What is its priority? Yeah, military. Bombs, smart bombs, stupid bombs, big bombs, little bombs. Guns, grenades, landmines, sea mines, air mines, jet fighters, aircraft carriers, special weapons, energy rays, and all this kind of esoteric stuff. Torture, not the old fashioned ways, but more sophisticated stuff that you can pay PhDs to devise for you. This is, you know, let's look at science, how nice science is, that medicine has given us, you know, new life or something. But half the money, roughly speaking, goes to improve methods of destroying people's lives. You like objectivity, that's objective. Look at where the funding is coming from and look at where it's going. As far as saving people's lives, nature seems to make it very difficult, because you conquer tuberculosis and she comes up with AIDS. You conquer AIDS and she comes up with the next thing. You can't win. You can't really succeed in wiping out disease, because disease always comes back. Can't stop death, can't stop old age. You can talk about it, but it doesn't work. Nature always gets the upper hand. All you're able to do is increase your expertise in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. You can sophisticate it and make life worse. And you do some nice things like better surgical instruments and iPods, okay. But on balance, you know, considering where most of the money goes and where most of the advancement is, are we improving life? Or just looking at what ultimately matters, are we improving life? No. The doctors themselves are dying. And do they know why? And do they know what's next? They didn't learn that in medical school. Not part of the curriculum.
You just mentioned AIDS, and I just remember when what happened, like, I was
was talking with a man on the street, and he was saying, how do you know that it's true what you are doing? And I said, it's because it works. So that anything works, what people go around, everything that they do works. So, but they still have these four things, like old age, disease, and birth. And so you mean that you don't have disease? Hare Krishna, don't have AIDS? And then I said, no, but afterwards I said, yes, I don't have. But then I afterwards only thought that it's really that you don't have AIDS.
Yeah, but this is very simple. We found the cure for AIDS. They're doing all this research. We know how not to get AIDS. Objectively speaking, they're not willing to take up the process. They can't. We know how to live free from AIDS. Simple, simple. No cost solution. No research required. No tremendous budgets. If you don't want AIDS, don't have sex. At least not willy-nilly. This is their research. How can we have sex willy-nilly and not get AIDS? Why go the long way around? Why not just, well, why don't we just stop willy-nilly sex and not have AIDS? That they won't do.
Because it's mentioned that this world is dualism, it's dualistic. Someone can argue, well, all these things are bad, but because this world is revolves in opposites of them, black, white, day, and night, if there's something bad about it, then there must be something good about it.
Say again?
No, in the Bhagavad Gita, it says that this world is dualistic.
That's dualistic, there's good and bad, so if there's something bad about science or modern civilization, there must be good, something good about it?
Yeah,
all these bad things can be used in the service of Krishna and then they become good.
Just on that point, Maharaj, I listen to a problem picture where devotees will ask you about technology and whether we should use it or not, or whether we should develop it. And give the example of the mouse and the snake, the mouse building a house.
Mouse and the snake logic. The mouse builds a nice little hole for a home, and the snake eats the mouse and lives there. So let them work hard, develop all these technology, and we'll use it. Just like they work hard and they all this tax money and they build beautiful parks, and then they all go driving to work and never they can never go walk in the park. And the devotees chant Hare Krishna, walk in the park. Snake and the mouse philosophy. Yes.
So that first answer to the question about poverty being in a better position, advantageous.
Potentially.
So many Hare Krishnas are in what we consider relative poverty, always trying to make ends meet, and somewhat disturbed.
Yeah, devotees are generally a little poor and disturbed in their financial lives, but not nearly as disturbed as if they were rich. We may think that if I were rich, then I could, you know, prosecute Krishna consciousness nicely. That's when the problems start, is when your wealth comes. Not always easy to handle. You become rich and you forget Krishna. So a little bit of poverty. But apart from that, if you're poor and you live a natural life, then it's not quite all right. Just to be poor and slogging it out in the job market in London may not be very pleasing. Therefore, Prabhupada wanted to establish Varnashram, wanted to establish natural living with dependence on the land. Brahmacharis, they're naturally poor. They really have it good. They don't have anything. So they're happy-go-lucky. No money, no expenses. So no mortgage, no rent, no car payments, no diapers, No, none of that. They don't have to worry about it. So they're poor and happy. Otherwise, for the householders especially, Prabhupada wanted to promote this simple way of life. Not just to be poor in the midst of a materialistic way of living, but to live in simple fashion as Krishna arranged things. That will be better. I think they call that dirt poor. There's an expression, I don't, it's maybe not British, but in America, if somebody's really poor, they say dirt poor. But to be poor and to live on the dirt is actually very good. To live on the land. You're going to be poor and you live on the land. That's nice. Yes?
After Marsh, just in my game's meeting, it appears that wealth can say we just don't have time for our spiritual life.
Devotees often say they don't have time for the spiritual life because they're making their ends meet. Make the ends closer to one another and they'll meet more easily. This is a whole topic, but it's the unpacking that just a little bit, it means reduce your expenses. When we live, Krishna consciousness means bare necessities. Luxuries are not going to lead to happiness. So if you radically cut your expenses, the ends meet more easily. Simple thing. If you, there's some statistics published by Department of Labor or something in America. Some years ago, decades ago, if a man and his wife were both working, it's because they were really poor and they needed two incomes to, you know, scrape by. Now, so many men and their wives are both working, and it's to maintain their standard of living. So now they're both working to make ends meet. And it's a struggle because the ends are so far apart. How do you make this end meet that end? Well, we both have to work overtime. And we don't even see one another, and the kids are someplace. And you seen the kids this week? No, I haven't seen them. Have you seen them? So our philosophy is to bring the ends closer together. If you don't need it, don't buy it. What's the interest on a credit card today? Great, none of you know. That's fantastic. But it's someplace up like 20-something percent. It's like what people used to go to jail for charging. And people are, you know, I want it, I swipe my card, I buy it, and then I pay 20-something odd percent interest. You know, I'm not even paying for anything. You know, that extra 20, however many percent. It's not that I get something for that, other than the privilege of getting the thing before I'm eligible to get it. Or getting, buying something I really don't have the money for. That's really what it is. People are living in debt, and they're encouraged to live in debt. You've been pre-approved for this credit card. We've made it easy for you to go into debt. Yeah. We'll give you extra airline miles for going into debt. You can have a picture of your favorite charity on your credit card when you go into debt. Go into debt for us, with us for 23%, 27%, and we'll give one penny per pound to your favorite charity. Go into debt, go into debt, go into debt, go into debt. Someone was telling me, quite a conversant person in the world, that when you pay for something, what's the biggest component in terms of, you know, what makes up the price of that item? He said it's debt. Because the raw materials were purchased on credit. Debt. The company borrowed money for its research and development and for so many other things that it needs to do, for the mortgage on its factories, for so many things. Debt. goes along to the distributor who's been advanced money by the bank to stock his business debt. And then finally you buy the thing on your credit card debt. And that, and we're having trouble making ends meet, aren't we? Simplify, 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 simplify. Happiness, be happy by chanting Hare Krishna, not by the stuff. We don't need the stuff. If we live with basic necessities, making ends meet is doable. And the hour hand has met the hour and passed it a little bit. So, does that mean we stop? That means we stop. Okay, thank you all very much. Hare Krishna, all praise to you.